Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, Greenhorns. This is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers by young farmers. And in today's episode, we're going once again into the ocean to speak with the chef of the Tres Hombres boat. Well, she calls herself Cookie because on a boat you have a very small kitchen. So you have to
Yeah. Order
everything. This is Leanne DeBeer. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, Severin. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you and where are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm still recovering a bit from my long journey. I was altogether 2 years at sea and for 1 year at Tres Hombres. And I'm in Rotterdam right now. I'm looking at a nice sunset after a moody day over the big industrial harbor of Rotterdam, which is the main port of Europe for in and exports of all kinds of goods.
My mother always has this joke about her favorite kind of tea, and when she tried to explain in the tea shop what did this tea smell like, she said it smelled like the docks of Rotterdam because it was a little bit stinky and smoky. Can you talk about the cargoes that are going in and out of that port and a little background about the vision of the Tres Hombres?
Tres Hombres was founded by the three men. That's why it's called Tres Hombres. Jorna, Andreas, and Arjen. And they had a vision about sailing cargo emission-free. And also, because they were true sailors, they sailed around Cape Horn, and they knew each other from the traditional sailing school in Enkhuizen, that they wanted to sail without an engine. And then also more ideas and ideology grew from there to start fair transport and to promote emission-free sailing of all kinds of goods. But now we have Tres Hombres, which is a 100-foot schooner brig, we can sail 35 tons, which is half of a big container. And we have an unbelievable amount of supporters, publicity. Everybody knows the rum. Everybody knows the chocolate. But it's not that much cargo, but it's a big, big message getting through there. And now they're also working on an alliance with other sailing flights like the Greyhound and the Avontuur.
I was super happy to meet you and the crew of the Tres Hombres in Falmouth when there was a rendezvous with the Greyhound Lugger and kind of a meeting of the Sail Alliance and the docking of the Tres Hombres coming in full of rum and chocolate loading up onto the dock in Falmouth, which is pretty epic seaside
Yes. City,
and super struck by how similar this nautical culture is to this young farmer culture, similar counterculture, similar politics, really strong, brave, wild souls. And listening to you talking about the experience and the politics of provisioning for that boat as she sailed this traditional route down to the Caribbean to fetch these products, which, of course, were the products previously of slavery. Could you talk a little bit about trading in those towns, provisioning in those towns, and your experience on the ship?
Yes, well, it was quite an experience. I had as you said, I had a very small galley. It was just one stove and an oven, and it was on deck. So a little in a little house on deck, it really felt like camping at sea. Then attached to that, in the galley was the front mast going through. And I had a little roof window where I could see all the yards and the sails, and if I could see what they were doing, and I could manage myself around there. And then I was strapped to the stove with a rope, and I was clicked in with a harness even, and I had to set the pans and the pots and the pans. I had to screw them between iron beams. And behind that was a little galley where we ate in shifts, and I was cooking for 15 people, three meals a day. And if it was a bit cold, which was quite soon because everybody was completely exposed to the elements, you just needed so many calories. So I had to cook three warm meals a day. And that was really a day job on its own. I had no fridge, no freezer. And there was a dry store, but because the ship is tumbling a lot, also the vegetables, there were some kind of vegetables that could not handle the ship, and also some kind of fruits. And we had all different kinds of ways of putting and storing fruits and vegetables. We got a lot of legumes and dried beans from Hatmedat, which is a very nice organic bean farm in the south of England, and they also grow quinoa, and we had a lot of peas and split peas and fava beans, and we enjoyed the whole through the whole trip. And then we had to get fresh greens and vegetables from everywhere where we were. Not everything is available. One thing that is most available, and that I think many sailors know, is cabbage. And it stays well for the longest time, unless it had seen the fridge. As soon as a vegetable has seen the fridge, you take it out, it will decline within a rapid time, within 2 or 3 days. It really doesn't really matter what it is. If the vegetables or fruit has been imported, then you could already see it, and you would really get a feeling for it because you would kind of see it like the way it was spotting or wrinkling that it was in a cooling cellar before it came to the market. And some of the islands, they had a lot of their own produce, and they were less tourist involved. And they just made food for the people who were there. So they themselves made sure that there was a variety, or they let the nature determine that there was a variety. For instance, breadfruit, which is throughout the Caribbean, a very good growing product. And all kinds of indigenous and, for me, exotic flavors to learn how to work with. But, for example, if I would try to get potatoes on a Caribbean island, it would have no use because they were tasteless, they were imported, they were stored in a fridge before, so they would start to rot after 2 days. So I had to learn to work with breadfruit. And the islands where you saw where they would have a monoculture, for instance, like in La Palma, where they grew a lot of bananas, a lot of fruit, which put a big pressure on the island. And La Palma is part of Spain. So they kind of pretend that everybody was there was still in Spain, so you only had Spanish products, even though the island maybe from origin had a lot more to offer. But they completely transformed it into a new part of Spain with a lot of bananas on it, for which they needed a big, stinky water maker. The water quality there, the drinking water quality was not so good. And there were only bananas there. And all the rest of the products, of which I know for sure, of the fruits and vegetables that will grow perfectly on La Palma, but they imported for some odd reason, they were quite bad quality and quite bad taste, and I don't have any equipment with me, but I had the feeling in my body and the way the people responded to the food, they were also not so nutritious. And it's really a shame that some of these islands are completely drawn to some kind of monoculture, and you can see quite clearly what it does to the rest of the grows and crops on the rest of the islands. And I think it's a world on its own, to like a microcosmos that shows how this can evolve on the continent. You only grow in one area one kind of crop, and then you import the other crops from another place, and then you see that everything comes out of balance, and the whole island gets a very plastic manufactured feeling. And and also this terms that I talked about you with about at Falmouth, that you have I was working at restaurants before I became a ship's cook, and I had a very a bit of a like a wild chef running around, and I was like, oh, but the customer, and then he would say like, oh, we don't have customers here, a prostitute has customers, we only have guests. And with which he meant that when you have a guest, you also welcome them as a host, as a human connection. And it's not a product you buy, it's an experience that you encounter. And the money is secondary. So you have, for example, you have small farmers and a few local fishermen, and you come there and you look at their skills, you are respectful towards their skills, they show you what to get instead of you tell them what to get them for you, and then you will know for sure that you will have the best thing made in the best possible way, and you also have a really nice connection with each other, a very nice human experience. And I think this is something that is very important for us humans, for us being on this planet, to create and to feel good about what we do and what we consume. And that really became clear going from one remote place to another. And also sometimes the crew on the ship, they were guests, but sometimes they were really tired and they just wanted to have French cheese. So they got French cheese from Martinique for a cheap price, and they would sneak it up their cabins because everybody would always have like a little, there were debates on the ship constantly about consuming and about sustainability. And there were a lot of products banned from the ship as well, like palm oil. We tried to get rid of all the palm oil, but we want to have cookies. So where do you find cookies without palm oil? How do you do it with a budget that's so small? What do you do with a crew that's cookie addicted? All these kinds of things. It's not so easy. People think, of course it's good that they have the intention that they always want to change, but it goes quite far into your habits and your cravings, which are the most hard to change within. And it was a really nice experience to see it happening. And also with me, when I came in Bonaire, there were a lot of Dutch products there, and I was like, oh, hagelslag, which is these like tiny chocolate sprinklings, of which the chocolate was transported to the Netherlands, made little sprinkles out of it, and then brought back to Bonaire in a cooling cellar or cooling container, so the chocolate wouldn't melt. And still, I couldn't like hold myself back from not buying a little hagelslag after being at sea for 6 months. And it's just so insane. But I don't think anybody. It's not about judging or anything. It's just about being aware of this, that it extends to a level that goes so far Also, yeah, looking over the harbor here in Rotterdam, what they're all importing here, and the ships they use for that, and the pollution they cause, and also the manufacturing of the products that are being transported. It's eye-opening to realize this, and So I had a very interesting time, and I tried to have little conversations with my friends and family about it, and I also organized debate evenings about this issue. And Rotterdam is a very nice place because you can really they have lots of initiatives here of local farming, and it's getting more and more and more. And you try to get things from your own city, and in between the big buildings, they have little gardens. So I think people are getting more and more aware, and they're also more open for this message that I'm trying to, bring back to the Western world. And
I remember in the kitchen. Thank you so much. You're doing a beautiful job of weaving this tapestry of personal, interpersonal, institutional, and practical insight from this voyage. It struck me so much in the kitchen or in the galley on the boat, eating the honey from the Azores and the beautiful pancakes that you made, and the experience of the boat people in the town, and everyone having spent so much time in such intimate quarters together and taking, as you say, a pretty radical approach to their lives at sea with no no cooling and no motor, and making, as you say, pretty radical changes. The energetic experience of that sail team as you went through the town and coming into a bar, but more like standing outside of the bar and not needing to interact as much with the conventions of buy and sell, or the conventions of engagement with the activities that become so normative to our culture. And it strikes me how, in the same way when you're collecting that honey from the Azores or participating in these formerly colonial economies in the Caribbean and participating in this traditional trade route which brought slavery, how our bodies, our winds, our institutions have such a charged and loaded memory, and how embedded those memories are in our bodies. Watching for and having a self-reflection space to see the change kind of personally, then on a boat or a community scale, and then watching how that change interaction makes such a powerful impression kind of on a larger group, in your case through, I guess, the communication about the boat. For me, that was very powerful, very, very powerful experience. I think probably everywhere you go, you make a big impression. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, with the boat, we do. It's. I think it's also because it's kind of a boy, every boy's dream, or wild girls like tomboys. Girls dream to be a pirate in a way, but in a nice way, you know. And that's basically what you are allowed to do. You're allowed to climb all day. You work with your body. You go through storms. We went through heavy storms for almost 2 months. You're in paradise. You go to these remote destinations, and you anchor in the most beautiful bay in the world with a magical feeling of the sweet mystery of the Caribbean. You're constantly surrounded by wood and ropes and wind and sea and lots of dolphins whales swimming along. You can climb up the rigging to see the whales and all the jellyfishes and the change in the flora and the fauna. You come to know so gradually because you at most times we are around 7 knots, so that's 1.8 kilometers. An hour, and then times 7, and then sometimes you go 12 knots if you're really in a rough weather or good winds, and you have to pull ropes and you have to be really careful, and you're, you know, between a sailor and eternity is only a little wooden plank, so you have to be very careful at what you do, and also your world becomes so small in a good way, because even though you're going into the world, everything becomes so simple. So, for instance, I asked the mate, like, hey, so how's the weather looking for the next few hours? He's like, it's probably going to stay like this, but, you know, hey, I'm not God, but don't pin me down on it, but I think it's going to stay like this. So I was like, okay, I'm going to make lasagna. And then it just went completely wrong, and the lasagna went dancing in the oven. And then I felt like I did something horrible for 2 days. Like, that's all I had. That was like, and other people were like, yeah, we just scraped it off the floor and we ate it anyway. We really don't care. And you did a good job and we understand. But I was like, no, I can't believe this. This is like the worst thing ever happening to me in my life. And it's so funny how you see, your world becomes so simple in a way. And you get really focused on what you're doing, and everybody, gives them their all, and we all keep an eye on each other as well. You use your whole body to move this ship towards the other side of the world, and that is such a powerful thing. And you really get to know each other. You really have to work with each other. You have to rely on each other. It's such a good, great opportunity to learn more about the social interactions, about your personal glitches and qualities and. It's very funny because I had yesterday I had with one of my former crew members. She visited me in Rotterdam, and she said, like, yeah, what else is there to prove? And it's funny that you say that. Like, no, we don't. Yeah, and we were sitting on the bike in the rain, and we were joking, like, yeah, we went through the storm together in Brixham. We know rain. We know what wet is. And it's a bit jokingly, of course, but you really come out of that, even though you're completely worn down after a year. You really come out of this whole experience as a stronger person. And it comes back in ways that you don't really notice. I'm such fortunate person that I was able to cook for these guys and to be part of the Tres Hombres, and it's really a big family. They don't have like a very set structure, even though heaven knows they try to get it in, but it's such an organic flowing movement. You really run into these moments of synchronicity, that you meet one person who has something with the other person and it all comes together at the right moment. And these kind of magic moments that you usually assure you have like once a month or maybe every 2 months, and then you have them every time you get into port. You meet the most fantastic people and all kinds of pioneers and other ways, and it's amazing. It's short of any other terms for it, but yeah, it's really something special. So maybe that's the energy that we brought to Falmouth, And officially, we were in European on European land when we were in the Azores. But for me, it felt being back at Europe when I was in Falmouth, and so that was also, yeah, quite an experience to be there, and to have the feeling that, well, I did this. I did this crazy trip with all the storms and the no wind, for, you know, you're just drifting towards, you want to go to the Azores and you're kind of drifting towards New York for a week and a half, and you see the provisioning going lower and lower and lower. And first you're really like, okay, well, the vegetables, okay, they're gone. So now what? Okay, maybe dry beans and rice. So the last week we had dry beans and rice. And then the last 4 days I got so panicked because I thought, but what about the coffee and the toilet paper? And then you're like, but do we really need that? And then, yeah, maybe not, maybe we do. But, yeah, these are things, they sound so trivial. And in a way, of course, they are, but they also are not trivial, because we do, as a society, go through great extent to get coffee every day and to get toilet paper and to get all these things that we find simple luxuries. We take them for granted, water boiler. For example, proper working oven. It's just, and it just makes you very humble towards everything, I guess.
So, of course, I'm again swept away completely in the romance of the windswept future. And I wonder if you could just tell a little bit the practical detail. How do people get involved to become sailors with Tres Hombres or with other ships? How do you get on? How do you get in? What are you carrying from where to where? How long does it take to get across the ocean? And what do you recommend for people who are just thinking about learning these skills? What occurs to me... Well, I'll have you answer that, and then I have another thing to say, but then we have to go. Ooh, running out of time. Okay, quick.
Okay, well, I was just a very enthusiastic home cook, and then I ran into the captain on the night of my graduation of my bachelor degree, and then he said, I really need a cook, and I was like, yeah, sure. And that's how I got in. But most people come to Den Helder for the refit as a carpenter. Den Helder is the port where Tres Hombres stays for having a main refit, and a lot of carpenters come there, skilled men, people who are unexperienced but very enthusiastic that want to learn. There's so much to be done in that short 6 weeks. Then you get to know the people who are working at the office that are doing amazing, amazing work for Tres Hombres, which are like... Yeah, they in a way are like the organizational engine behind this whole movement, and then all the people on the practical side that do the carpentry and the rigging. But for rigging, you need people that really know what they are doing, that can instruct other people, and through that you learn. And if you are very, you're good with the group and you have time and you're there at the right time, at the right moment, preparation meets opportunity, then you can be invited as a volunteer. If you don't have that much time or you're not living in a free world like that, and you can also join as a trainee on the Tres Hombres, you go to fairtransport.eu, and there they have place for 8 trainees, and there is a bit of a waiting list, but you can email and call to see where there is a spot and which routes you want to do. And in that way, you really learn to be a sailor hands-on. So it's not for the weak or the faint-hearted. You have to be physically fit to do it. You're going to test your boundaries, but it's a hell of a ride. And that's also a way to do it. And in that way, you really support the Tres Hombres project for the maintenance on the ship. and also to continue and to expand the fleet. And then there's another way. There are also two other sailing boats, of which I don't really know, but they're on the website as well, so you can check it out if you can join the crew or go as a trainee. And there is another possibility: if you have a ship and a nice sailing ship and a seaworthy, and you have a lot of experience with sailing the oceans, then please contact Fair Transport if you have a cargo hold to join as a skipper, as a ship, to join the fleet. And that's also another way to do it. And the there are, as I said, alliances are being formed still as we speak, and this fleet has to expand and evolve. And there's also... one of the captains told me, like on a nice afternoon, like, hey, we were talking about different kind of products. He said, well, the traditional products work best. So what they were sailing traditionally is probably what's going to work best. It's going to work best for the country, and because they did it a few hundred years ago when they didn't have the means to... manufacture agriculture as we do now, so it was there in abundance to begin with, and so we know we can get honest products from there, and the roots just work the best. So that's how you come up with the products. Rum from Caribbean, of course, chocolate from Caribbean works pretty fine, but it's or from South America, tea from China, for example. You name it. You dig into the history books, and that's where you have your answers.
So the answers in the history books, you can find that information online, and then you can get offline. Something about this sailboat technology and the decisions that arise from a set of institutions and materials that don't require a computer to figure out really appeals to me. Sitting as I do so frequently on the computer, coordinating things and organizing things, and I'm noticing that complexity is often eroding the sovereignty of the people involved. And there's something very attractive, even just in the philosophical question of whether the future we want to build together is so complex that it needs so much computation, or if that future is more elegant and less complex in terms of its management. So anyway, these are philosophical, unanswerable questions, but I hope that they are penetrating your mind. Mm-hmm. Listen, dear farmers, from your iPod in the field, with your fingers down in the weeding patch. And I'm really thankful to you, Rianne, for your gracious hostessing on the boat and for your care of that crew and getting them safely across the ocean a few times. For those of you who haven't yet heard, we Greenhorns are so pleased to join this movement, first with Vermont Sail Freight down in the lake, Champlain and the river locks to Hudson to River... Hudson, which is Tidal River, to New York City, and now down the coast in the salty wild ocean on a 131-foot wooden schooner called the Harvey Gamage, who's transporting 11 tons with us from Maine to Boston with so many dockside events, lectures, songs, history stories, activities for children. Lots of dinner parties, of course, in order to raise all the money to make it happen. All the information is on our website, and there's even rumors now of the Harvey Gamage going south for the winter. And I had a very interesting conversation at the Boston Public Market which is our brand new in Boston, just opened last week. Full season, year-round, all local market that's owned by the city, in the city building, right next to the Department of, what's it called, DMV, Motor Vehicles. So you can get your driver's license, and then you can go and meet farmers in a very dignified space. And there I met a chocolate manufacturer who was very interested in chocolate, and we had a very fun trading moment. So anyway, things are bubbling, and I hope they keep bubbling between the land and the sea if we are fluid and cooperative and make a good trade with each other. I think we'll both be happy.
Thank you,
Liane.
Yeah. Thank you, Severin.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and look forward to speaking with you next week again. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.